everybody know about naturalrock.net?
Just on the MySpace, but I don't know. That all I just saw it, you pop up and it was Jay Paul. I was like, some bitch can't.
It's just just like local bands and stuff. It's just kind of a collective of local bands or whatever.
That's sweet.
But the thing that I do is like the cover band portion of the of the site, which is, you know, cover bands have always been like the redheaded, you know, bastard
stepchild. Oh yeah.
And rightly so. I mean, they should be. It should be about original rock music. But
well, the way that we figured it was just like when we were getting to the point where it was kind of running itself dead. It was kind of like, it's sort of like watching an old lady with no teeth trying to suck kidney beans out of a tin can with a crazy straw. It sounds like a really interesting proposition, but do you really want to see it live?
Yeah.
You know? So we got to the point where it was just like life got in the way, you know, and it was like, and we just sort of like decided to just sort of like, you know, phase it out. And it was probably good for on a lot of different levels, honestly. But the thing that was the weird thing, because we've been around enough bands to know the general dynamics of bands is that most of the time when you're in a band and, you know, and you stop playing together, it's just like, okay, bye. But Andy was the best man at my wedding, you know.
Right.
And Booty and I toured the world doing tricks with Zippo lighters, you know. And Philip said hi once.
Yeah.
And but I mean, but really, it's like even though at any given time during the band when he was really playing, we were at each other's throats. Okay.
Right.
But there was like sort of a big come to Jesus meeting one Thanksgiving, and we all just came together, and we just sort of was like, it was better to be friends than anything like that. And then after everybody kind of got over whatever ills had happened, you know, and all the silliness and stuff, it was like you start remembering like the good things that happened, and you kind of forget about the crap that happened counts as character and experience. And the good stuff that happens, like, you know, gee, wouldn't it be nice if we could go out and, you know, so what happens when you say, hey, can we go out and play a gig? And everybody's like, no, not a whole bunch of gigs. No, not a whole bunch. Like, maybe one gig. And everybody does that kind of shit. And then we did, and it was fun. And a lot of people liked it. And so we're not doing it for money.
Right on.
And we're not doing it to get famous anymore. And we're doing it because...
But we know that line of thought will make us famous.
No, it won't. But the thing of it is, though, nobody else seems to do it. And it's like, okay, well, we're just going to go out and do the same old shitty covers that we always used to do, the way that we used to do them.
It works.
The shitty way we used to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we never did anything right. No. I mean, and it was just like... It was like we played them in the wrong key. We organized them wrong. But I mean, most of the time we were pretty stretched thin. Mm-hmm.
It was a train wreck, but we all started together and we stopped at the same time.
That was really what counted.
That's all that mattered.
It's sort of like karaoke rock band.
Yeah.
It wasn't really good, you know. It sounded good in our car, and then we didn't really care. We'd get up there, and it's that guy that's really bad at karaoke, but is the most entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, I thought we were, you know, we sounded our best. You know, the one of the beauties of playing.
I don't think we ever sounded our best.
The kind of circuit we were doing, you know, being booked with Crescent Moon for those years.
Like when we played with bands, we would play with who hate us to this day for some reason. They like fucking, their lead singer like hates Andy.
Really?
My wife's interviewed him and everything, and he's got like some fucking chip on his shoulder. We played with them, and we go up there like, yeah, really cool 311 stuff and everything. Okay, well, you know, thanks for opening up for us. Okay, we're gonna go kick your ass now. And, you know, and we just go out there and we fucking kick their ass. It was like, you don't want to fucking go before us. So the next time we opened for them, and they were like, and we came off, and I remember two of the guys in the band were like, oh, fuck, I don't want to go on after you. I mean, because it was just like, it's like we end the show, he's playing a chainsaw, I've got a guitar on fire, smashing it on stage, mine's on fire, Booty's passed out, you know,
Phillip's got a wig on.
I mean,
snorting cocaine.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, it was just, but you walk the walk and talk the talk. And that's what we don't. So none of us are really like rock and roll stars or anything like that, but when we are on stage, that was the point. It's like, you have to give them a show. So
I think we kind of got in a weird way. We worked hard for to get kind of where we were going. We kind of backed into it and was kind of lucky in getting the kind of circuit we were doing, you know, with Crescent Moon Talent getting us at the fraternity shows. And by the time you went on stage, there were some nights that the kids were just there and they were going to throw down no matter what the band was. Yeah. And those were the nights that you could really just
one of the things,
get up there and just say,
it's like you say, being like a good rock band, the we were scouted supposedly by this Sony A&R
band. He just wanted to sleep with Andy.
And we think he was gay and wanted to sleep with Andy. But
we never saw a business card, but he was fucking
taking one for the team.
He tried to kiss Andy. Yeah, but no, he wouldn't do it. That's fine. I mean, I'm not going to sacrifice your virgin stink.
It ain't virgin stink, dude.
But
remember Cynthia Wallace?
Yeah, well, she was a woman. She was like five women rolled up in one. But anyways, so the guy said, whether he was real or not, one of the things that he said, which was kind of endearing, and I almost kissed him right there, really deep. But he was up there in the Outer Limits talking to us, and he was like, guys, I mean, it's just like, you're the only band. He's like, I watched you guys, and you just fuck up all the time. And
you go right through.
And he said, you steamroll right through it like nothing ever happened. He's like, and nobody in the audience cares. And I was like, yeah, that's right, because we don't either, you know.
We're kind of like the Paul Stanley's or the David Lee Roths of the rock world. You know, not like a whole lot of talent, but good show.
It amazes me when people
average enough to cut the mustard, but a big spectacle.
It's like when people get down on David Lee Roth and they say, well, he can't sing. It's like, when could he ever? That wasn't the point. He was the master of ceremonies.
Yeah.
He showed up. He was drunk. He told you all his dirty secrets, and you went home, and you felt warm and fuzzy. Come on. This is the remembering the bad stuff is good, which was we never could do a set list, ever, because he would always change it, and he would always call the song depending on what he felt the crowd wanted to hear. So it would go crazy, and so our transitions, we'd always feel like the musician side of the band was like, man, we can't fucking segue, because you're like, you know, going, Take It Love, okay, and, you know, okay.
But you gotta let the front guy kind of feel the...
And that's what happened. Yeah. So, when we got back together, we tried to do a set list, and then what it came back to was the naturalness of him going, so, like, last practice, we're like, just fucking call it. He's like, but no, you've got the list, you call the songs, and we'll play.
And it's weird, because, like, during his guitar solo, that's when my brain goes, all right. What are they gonna want next? And I remember one night, you know, not getting into fisticuffs or anything, but I remember Richard getting pissed and like walking out of the backstage area of Main Street, like just being like, how come we're not doing a set list? We just want to try it once, you know, and I know that's always
how it drove us nuts. Feel. But now it's just like there's a lot when you don't have a lot of the pressures involved, like we have to make money because somebody has to survive. Yeah.
Beer.
Yeah.
Done.
We don't have those pressures when it's just like one of the best things in the world is being on stage and playing in front of people and them being like fucked up beyond all belief
and singing
and just in like, you know, just going absolutely ape shit. And we've seen it and we know what it's like. The problem is to get to that point is involves an ever widening and deepening tidal pool of very steep shit, and you got to swim through it and wade through it, and pretty soon it just gets to be a drag. And you don't have any toilet paper. Yeah. And, you know, and it's just like, and you're done. So
Richard touched upon, you know, just then saying, you know, getting there and having the crowd so fucked up that it's just a great show because you're feeding off of their fucked up energy. And the fraternity houses, that's one of the reasons why I loved getting on that circuit. Now, don't get me wrong. I love playing shows where we get to play, you know, almost all original material too in nightclubs.
But when the crowd got so rowdy that we had to like push them off the stage because they were damaging shit,
that's fun
because you can't you talk to like the flicks of the world and they're like, well, we had to play this gig and a light bulb went off on stage, and it's like, well, we played the Pipe Brawl the first time and they set a bonfire in front of our van and almost blew it up. And then the second time, they almost threw a TV.
They burned some of our stuff.
That was the second time they burned the road case. And the
first time was the best.
They took one of our road cases and threw it in the fire.
Yeah. They were like, oh, we're sorry. We thought it was wood. And part of it was. But I mean, it's like you talk to like your normal run-of-the-mill like band that plays like little gigs around town and stuff like that. And you're like, it's like, if you ever had like, you know, like 8 million tits in a fraternity house on stage, I mean, it's just like, we have a couple of videos.
Yeah, I'm lucky
shot.
To get two a weekend.
Well nice. It's like, I have to be very calm now because, you know, I'm happily married for once, you know, but I can't watch a Boo Dogs video in my house because I'll get embarrassed. Because there's shit on there that I don't want to see anymore. It's like, oh God, yeah.
Did y'all ever do any out of state shows? You did?
That was all we did.
And would you take this van out here? Or?
We had an E250 extended cargo van with a grate behind the front seats, mm-hmm. and I found the original receipt to the Eliminators from Mars Music. Believe it or not, we had a little PA. When we kept blowing, we blew the Eliminators 4 times and had them reconed under warranty, and then we got a real big PA. We hodgepodged everything together. We toured in road cases. When we outgrew the van, we would just bring along us and then his woman, who is our sound man, and we would all ride in the van, and we towed a 6x12 packed high and tight. So it was just completely and utterly.
But for about 2 years, kind of near the end of the band's career, our shows, not necessarily us, but I think just the kind of places we got put into became a little lackluster, and it was kind of weird with the whole Zippo thing going on to continue to score primo gigs because we couldn't really tell them if we were going to be available or not. That's kind of fizzled out. But the year, that was probably like the last 6 months we were together. But the 2 years before that, however,
that was probably the heyday.
That was our heyday, and we were playing, you know, out in.
We played everywhere from Florida to Baton Rouge,
Arkansas.
Tell our listeners about the Zippo thing.
What happens was is in short, there's a website now. It's called LighterTricks.com. But what happens was is back about 2001, 2002, I found another site that was similar to it. And it was involved doing tricks with Zippo lighters, like little opening tricks and everything. So I got into it because I smoked at the time and got really good at it. And then when I was driving the van and playing with my Zippo at the same time to gigs, I'd drop it in the console and set shit on fire, and then Booty would take away the Zippo. Well, he started playing with it, and he didn't even smoke, so he got really good at it. He's just good. He's better at me than a lot of shit. But anyway, so he, what happened was, but I know, it's no lie. But anyway, so what happens was, we were like two guys in the same town who could do these bomb diggity tricks with Zippo lighters, and the guy who started the website in Norway knew it. He got bought out by Zippo. They hired us to go do a promotional tour. So we went to Norway, and we went to Mexico City, and we went to fucking France, and we went to LA several times, and New York, and Boston, and all these big fucking cities. And we were training all of Camel's reps. We were going to train all of Camel's reps, 1,000 reps, how to do tricks, but then Camel lost money that year, pulled the program, so they put us, they were going to do a Zippo hot tour thing. And then the National Fire Protection Administration came down on us because
you left out the good part.
What?
The hot tour was with Playmates.
Oh, yes.
So
we
partnered out with Playboy Playmates.
Yes, at every place we did.
It was not really fun.
Nice.
Yeah, it was terrible. So,
especially not in Boston.
Right, not in Boston at all. But,
well, not for you.
No, I had food poisoning, but he just like, you know, he was having fun with like, Playboy reps have big fucking credit cards, and they know how to spend. But, yeah. So,
what was the guy? Remember the guy in Knoxville? What was his name?
It's written down somewhere.
But you know that little like.
Yeah,
He worked some other promotion. I ran into him.
Oh, you're kidding me! Oh my God.
He was working for someone else. But.
So we did that, and then we got hired right about a month after the Great White Fire happened, and the National Fire Protection Administration caught wind of it because they burned a couple of our promotional videos to some commercials that played on MTV. A Flint, Michigan fire officer found it. Went ballistic, contacted the NFPA. The NFPA put pressure on some senators. Some senators went to Zippo. Zippo is a very old, respected American company, and they finally just said, fuck it. And they pulled the plug on the whole fucking thing. They shut down the website. They pulled the plug on the tour. They paid me and Booty for the rest of our year and took the year out of the contract so they didn't have to pay us for the second year. And washed their hands of us completely. The guy in Norway got his rights back for all the trick videos because it was ZippoTricks.com, which is non-existent. And he has since restarted LighterTricks.com. It just started about a month ago.
And the beauty of it is you couldn't write a more weird situation.
It's not an easy story. You know, it's one of those.
Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah, you can't make that shit up.
Well, and the funny thing of it is like Booty and me are fucking heroes in China. It's like, I shit you not.
I still get like IMs from like these Chinese dudes like,
I love your trick, such and such, and like the IME, can you send me, you know, an autographed picture or this, that, and the other?
So, you know, we both got several hundred Zippos that, you know, we had them design prototypes for us. We had them take armor case Zippos that were prototypes back then, and we gave them design specs and said, we want you to laser etch these kind of designs in them so they'll be easier for tricking. So we've got a treasure trove of those that there's like one of, you know, one of a kind in the world kind of shit. You know, and nobody...
That's gangsta.
Nobody fucking knows! It's just like, you know, it's like the world's best kept secret. So the Zippo thing was not really the death knell of the band, honestly. I think I hit rock bottom and just decided I had to like get my life straight.
Yeah. It was kind of like it was a combination.
It was a lot of things.
Different things, and I think you can only, you know, we were doing at our high point probably 80 to 100 shows a year, which isn't a lot compared to like, you know, huge national touring bands. But
we were,
you know,
going everywhere to do them. And
but we were going everywhere to do them, and we all had other jobs, and some of us were students at particular times and jobs and traveling. Yeah. But it was nice to actually, you know, we're one of those bands that were fortunate, you know, maybe to have never made it, but we're able to still put, you know, some money in our pockets. And on certain nights in certain venues, you know, particularly provided crowd, if it's, you know, three or four fraternities or sororities went in to rent something, you definitely felt like a rock star.
Well, the thing of it was, it's like, we, at the time...
And this is why you guys were playing covers.
Well, we started off playing covers because that was...
We had to fill some time in places.
Right.
I found... Plus, when I moved here...
This is like the first real band I ever played in, and I was still kind of learning how to play.
When I moved here, I hung up a flyer that said, I want to go deaf this summer playing in a rock and roll band. And I found the flyer about 3 days ago. And this girl that I was living with got the call from some asshole named Andy, who said he played gigs in Knoxville and wrote it down on the back of an envelope that my grandfather sent me. And I found the envelope because I never throw anything away. The first time you ever called me in 1996 or whatever it was. But so the, you know, it was just like we got together, and I remember the band as it came together was just sort of like, this is just fun. Let's make some noise. And then he was like all upset on getting gigs. I was like, okay, I've been playing in bands for fuck, you know, almost 10 years. And had just given up. I was going to be a rim major, but never finished. You know, got in the music industry and doing some shit like that. But it's sort of, it's very insidious. It was like, this is a lot of fun, you know. And then everything in my life for a long time was like structured around, like, how do I justify this? But really, it's for the band. You know?
Basically, the progression of the band started off with me, Richard, Phillip, and this other fella. And it was a different name. We did like one gig, and it something wasn't clicking right, and it fell apart.
He played his bass with a chisel.
A few months.
I'm thinking about bringing that back.
Well, yeah, but you could do it tastefully.
A few months go by. I was just kind of gave up on music for a while. Called up Phillip. We started jamming. We brought in Booty, and I think we asked Richard to come in
in
the studio.
And I said, nah. I was like, I'll do it if you pay me $100 a month.
Yeah.
So I was like, because I didn't give a shit, because I was making bank.
But he
at the
was
time.
Like making like 50, 60.
Yeah, 50 or 60 grand a year.
Yeah,
and I was like, yeah,
from
what?
This college kid.
So anyways, Andy's like holding out this $100 bill, and I'm like, here you go. And Andy's like, he wouldn't let go. And I'm like, give me that fucking $100.
I was a poor college kid. and then like a few months go by, and
I didn't charge him anymore.
I think a few months went by, and you just said, forget it. Or you gave me my money back. You said,
no, I didn't give you your money back. I spent it on tacos. But the,
you were just
$100
like,
$100 in tacos.
Yeah! So, he was like, he just thought we were having too much fun.
And it was just really hard, because like, as I was working as a salesman in the music salvage industry, it was like, do-do-do-do-do, I think I'll go pierce my tongue today. I'm coming to work, and I'm wearing a golf t-shirt and khakis and penny loafers, and I'm like, they're like, what's wrong? Why are you talking funny? Oh, I bit my tongue the other day. Then it was like, I think I'm going to pierce my ears. And my nipples! And my eyebrow! You know.
But
I took it all out.
It was real weird. Like, the first couple of years, we were flirting with, you know, Crescent Moon, trying to get hooked up with some kind of agency that could get us some money. And
we did a lot of crew
work. We were playing, like, Gentleman
Gyms. Well, we were playing, like, Gentleman Gyms. Yeah. And smaller...
We couldn't play the Borough.
And smaller places.
Yeah,
we got banned from the Borough. Because we were too loud and made a bartender. Yeah. She cried.
The thing is we just
We just slung, you know,
slung it out
in these clubs and in these smaller places, and eventually it got around to Crescent Moon, who we were, and I actually met up with, I don't know if you know Joe Darnell, but he used to be a lighting person at the cannery.
I'm gonna wait for that thing.
He remembered me, because when I was a little kid, he and his wife used to babysit me when I was younger, and he used to work with Bruce or play in a band with Bruce Binkley at Crescent Moon.
Right.
And eventually we name dropped him, and Crescent Moon picked us up, and we went with them freelance for about 6 months to a year, and then eventually they signed us on. And the beauty that was one of the smartest things we ever did was to get with them, because they allowed us to book our own shows at clubs around town, and they allowed us to keep other accounts that we already had. But they were putting us up in front of, you know, a couple of hundred kids, you know, 100 to 200 kids every night at a frat house, and paying us good money just to get up there and, you know,
play
a bunch of cover songs.
And they didn't care.
Yeah.
And our, you know, a lot of our show was, you know, how we looked. Richard had the contacts in, I had the eyeliner on, mm-hmm. Moody had his sunglasses on, leather vinyl. I mean, we were all decked out, mm-hmm. and it was, I think we were kind of a cool gimmicky band for them to have in.
And it was nice, because it was like, we would go out and we put on the show, you know, and it was like, and
we used to take pyro too.
We had a $3,000 pyro, La Maitre rig, and that all went shit after Great White. Fuckers, yeah. But you know, yeah.
They
ruined
a lot of people didn't realize that.
Yeah, Great White really fucked us up, but you know,
that's basically the core why the beat self-destructed. Blame it all on Great White.
Yeah, it's pretty sad when you blow up the rest of your fucking pyros in a cul-de-sac on 4th of July for the neighborhood kids. Look, it's fun. See, doesn't that burn up people? Any charred bodies? But the
so who's got original projects these days?
I do.
You do, yeah.
I do.
What's going on with that?
Playing with a couple guys that Philip used to play with in the Ever Afters.
Uh-huh.
Just kind of a rock band.
Are you playing out live?
No, I've just been jamming with them probably 2 months.
Still working it up
a
little bit?
We've probably tracked.
You got a name yet?
7 or 8 times. Well, we're kicking around a couple, so I'm not going to unleash one yet.
It's the funnest part. It's all downhill.
Yeah, exactly. So once we do that, I'm just going to quit.
Come on, unleash that fart. Let us smell it.
There's ones floating around.
Yeah, so okay.
Anybody else, Andy?
No. In my room, I write songs. Yeah.
Are you doing anything?
Yeah, I'm playing with, I play with the Jones World.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
With Todd Zilla.
Right on.
I play with that. I'm El Dorado Jones and the Jones World.
Yep.
I jam with some guys from work, and we call ourselves Holy Crap, and we write a bunch of Clutch meets Primus songs about
Mr. Bungle action happening.
Yeah, deviant, but all the lyrics are like deviant sex, like having sex with fat chicks or dead girls or midgets.
I want to hear that.
Weird, funny stuff, because we're just, you know.
Are you doing the Flystone show with the Rutledge?
Yeah, and I'm playing on that. The bass player that's in Holy Crap used to be in Full Devil Jacket or whatever, mm-hmm. And then I'm jamming with one of the guys that I used to play in the Ever Afters, doing something called Agent, and then I also played with Howard Grounds, which is the cover band.
Right.
And the Blue Dogs.
Right on.
He's busy.
I'm busy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not.
And I just got engaged.
He got engaged on stage at the last Jones World.
And a lot of people, you know, look at this band and say, you know, we're a party band or a cover band, but you know, we did quite a few originals. I mean, you heard two or three here too.
So. That was really what was the funny thing was the nice response that we got. It was warm. It was enthusiastic. You know. It wasn't like 10 million people emailed us and said, oh my God, you gotta do it again. But it was just like, the people who were there were like, fucking A, that rocks. It's not like they said, that was as good as it used to be. They were like, that was as fun as it used to be. That was the overwhelming response. It was like, well, then we need to do it again. And I mean, you know, he hasn't done shit since that we did anything. I haven't done shit other than, you know, recently getting together with Phil for the other bands and stuff like that. So. It was really cathartic more than anything else. It was just a nice release.
The cool thing about the last show that we did was we really made a conscious effort to make it close to kind of half and half as far as the covers and originals.
Yeah.
We were playing some original songs that in the at the end of the band's career, we had certain originals that we would always play out if we booked shows that were more original intensive.
Yeah.
But when we did this reunion show, we did original songs that we hadn't done since like 1998.
Because we actually put out, we actually recorded like three CDs. We recorded Sniff This.
Four, if you want to count the hidden...
Heartbush.
Yeah.
Which I have that tape.
Oh, do you?
I'll have to listen to that. But
well, I have to... It has to get converted over.
Yeah. I've got a copy of it, too.
I'm the Walrus on it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
But we did Sniff This, which is a you know an actual thing where we were you know we had like
pictures
one cover. Yeah, and then we did an EP. In between the EP and the first one was the Bart Bush thing.
But the EP was the best sonically.
Sonically, the EP was we actually had a guy come in who sort like of a producer
studio.
Role.
Yeah, we did it.
In fucking what was it?
Quad.
We did it at a fucking place where Neil Young recorded The Harvest Moon.
Clapton did
Ronnie Size was there mixing an album, smoking a blunt in the bathroom.
Right.
I was like, oh, he's like, you know, I was like, 2-inch tape, the whole analog, you know, the whole real, you know,
nice.
Real recording studio, what you see in the movie.
But when it came down to the end.
Do y'all have that for sale?
The EP?
No, I
have copies of it.
We have copies of it.
You don't bring them to your shows and sell them?
No, that was our. That was always our.
We
fuck
did,
up.
But I mean,
we would
we've
always.
Done we've one
did
a, show in what 3 years?
Yeah,
two
we
years?
We had we made we did 100 T-shirts. We sold them all, gave away about 20% of them, and then we never ever invested the money back in. We'd always put it in something else. So
yeah,
we fucked ourselves.
Such as Kentucky.
Shut it.
No, that's not in my.
Shut it all up.
But what we did is at the end of the band, before everything. was gone. We had a lot of songs that we had written a bunch and it was like we've got to get these down now while we remember them while they're still good but we have to make this fun and the only reason why we're doing this is to burn off what's left in the band bank account and to have something you know for us. And that's what we did. So we went in, and in...
I've never gotten a copy of those covers, by the way.
I've got... Well, there's no vocals.
Oh, but there's a lot, Andy, for dropping the ball. You do.
No, no, no. He did scratch vocals. All I've right, got them with scratch, and I've got them without.
I've got them without, but...
So what we did is we, by committee, we said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to go in, and we're going to do a show. Everybody gets to pick, like, three covers.
We can track vocals.
And we're going to do those covers front to back. We're letting the tape roll. It doesn't matter if we fuck up. We're blasting right through them. Well, we ended up with 18. Because 3 times 4 is 18. And so we did the 18 covers, and they're actually really representative of what the show was all about. So that was good.
How many days did we do it in?
Three.
How many
we days? Tracked in 3 days, the music. The vocals took a couple of years. But
they're still not done.
And the studio burned down, so it's done. But then we did, how many originals did we do? We did 13 or 14 originals. And so we've got the masters of those, you know, not mastered, but, you know, like good enough where we can remember. It's just really a nice representation of what was going on at that time.
A token of.
And so, you know, some of those songs we'll play and stuff like that. And that's all really good.
All right, let's wrap up. Anybody want to send a shout out to your favorite local bands?
We hate local bands.
Yeah,
you can put that on there too.
Yeah, I like to just say that.
We got beef with everybody.
Yeah.
No, don't name anybody.
No, wait. Everybody, nobody liked us. We didn't know anybody except for Mink.
Yeah, I'm done. Thank you guys.
Mink and the Jones.
Right on.
And those were the people that really treated us pretty much nice. And what was Charlie's band?
Fate.
Good old Fate. Gotta love them. And Click. Why? Why it's not like we hated you, but you know, good lord, we thought you guys were nice. Why do you hate us?
I slept with all of their girlfriends.
Oh, you did? Oops.
Finally.
The secret comes out.
Yeah.